The busiest shopping season of the year has begun. But for compulsive shoppers, the season has no beginning, middle, or end. Compulsive shopping is the subject of Paul Rudnick's comic novel, I'll Take It. The story opens as Joe, who's 26 years old, Yale-educated and unemployed, is getting picked up at his Manhattan apartment by his mother. They and his two aunts are setting out on a drive through New England to see the leaves change color. But the trip is really an excuse to stop at all the stores and outlets along the way. Paul Rudnick is a humorist who's written for Spy, Esquire, and Vanity Fair. When Terry talked with Paul, she asked him if shopping played an essential role in his life.
Yes, it certainly does. That's why I wrote the book. And I found it a very sort of worthwhile and generally delightful pursuit. And I wanted to write a book that was sort of a tribute to shopping and something to honor it instead of, I think there's a usual tendency to either be ashamed for it to be everyone's secret shame and hidden passion, or for it to be looked on as sort of the, you know, the dark underbelly of capitalism. But I think it's, you know, a major plus.
Let me ask you, if you think of as shopping as being a lot of people's dirty secret, when did you come out about shopping?
Oh, I think I was never in. I think I was sort of indoctrinated since birth, and it's just been one long river since then.
Your book is not only a tribute to shopping, but it's also a tribute to shopping with relatives, to shopping with a mother, with aunts. What values do your mother and aunts represent to you in the cosmology of shopping?
Ah, well, first I should say that my mother and aunts also have represented a universe of wonderful things to me. Not just shopping, that there was an emphasis on museum going and theater and other people and kindness and all sorts of things, which all could be combined with shopping. That was why I always admired my mother and my aunts, was that they managed to find the shopping element in activities that would somehow seem to exclude it. So some of these I cover in the book, that when we would go to the Metropolitan Museum to show that we were cultured intellectual types, we would always know that there was a reward at the end of, you know, all the Van Goghs and all the Picassos. We knew that there would be a gift shop, and that would sort of keep you going. It would be the carrot. So I think I was taught that, oh, the shopping was a wonderful reward. There was that it was an adventure, that a bargain could never hurt you. What else? That I think it was just viewed as, oh, an expedition. That's from my earliest memories, are of setting out and of the discovery of it all, and that shopping was something that was different all over the world, and that it was a way to learn about whatever place you were visiting, from New England to France to California. You would see what were the local crafts, and of course, what was the shirt that you wanted in New Jersey that cost $29.98, you might find in South Dakota for, you know, a third off. So, you know, justifying the entire nation that way.
Paul?
Yes?
As you know, you're joining us from the New York Bureau in Manhattan, and your mother, Selma Rudnick, is in the studio with me in Philadelphia, and I'd like to introduce her. Selma Rudnick, welcome.
Hello, Terry.
Hi, Selma Rudnick.
Hi, Paul Rudnick.
I think this whole interview is merely a method of saving on the phone bill. Very handy.
Not a bad idea, Paul.
I want to talk a little bit about the experience of parent and child shopping together. I think this is a universal experience that we've all had with varying success. I'd like to ask first, when you first started shopping together as a teen.
Well, Paul used to just get dragged along because we really didn't hire a babysitter when we were going shopping. We would just say, get in the car, we're going shopping.
Like a puppy.
And Paul was pretty good-natured about the whole thing because he usually brought a book to read. I didn't know at the time that he was probably bringing a paper and pencil. Had I known that, I probably would have left him home.
A paper and pencil, taking notes of the
experience. That's right, exactly, that he was starting his book at the age of six. And many people have asked him how he knows so much about the Lohmann's dressing room, for instance. But he was a good sport about coming along, and he did reach a certain stage in adolescence where he didn't want to be seen with his parents either shopping or doing anything else for that matter. And Paul, you may well remember that when we went to Europe and you were an adolescent, the minute we hit a store or a museum, you would say, I'll meet you here in half an hour, and then make tracks so that nobody would think that you were conceivably related to myself or your father.
Well, I think you've hit on something, and that is, I think there is a period in every son or daughter's life when they don't want to shop with their mother or father because they're slightly embarrassed about the whole thing. And then you get a little bit older and you realize no one is going to be more honest with you about how something looks than your parent with you, right? Yeah.
Well, except you see, I think it all relates to a basic moment, which is the purchase of a bar mitzvah suit.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Which, if you go to Barney's in New York especially, although there was a certain store in New Jersey as well, you will see a mother usually with a 12 or nearing 13-year-old son, and they will be deciding what he should wear at his bar mitzvah, whether it should be a simple dark suit, or in my case, I broke precedent and wore a sports jacket with contrasting slacks. But that moment is, I think, when there's sort of the shopping separation, when you realize your taste might be different from your parents, and that it's a moment of a lot of whining, I think.
Paul, do you think of this book as being autobiographical?
In certain elements, I think it certainly is. There are things in this book that are true fiction.
I think he draws on certain experiences that I recognize. Then again, he has drawn these characters much, much larger than life. And it did make me very nervous reading it the first time. And as I said to Terry before, I think that... I thought I was going to have to start a support group made up of Nancy Reagan and the late Joan Crawford and perhaps a few other people whose children had taken out after them. But I do think it's an affectionate book. I try to tell myself that.
But I think it really is. I think that's really clear that it's this really loving relationship with a lot of teasing going on between the mother and son.
That we certainly do in our family, and that is the way we communicate. But Paul has a vivid imagination, and he has really enlarged on certain experiences in a way that really interests me.
Paul, let me ask you, when you were writing the novel, did you... Because I always wonder this with writers. Did you feel like, I should talk this over with my mother and see if she'll be offended by any of the scenes? I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that could really cripple a novelist. On the other hand... You don't want to feel like you're going to be hurting the feelings of anybody in your family.
Right, yes. No, that was very much a concern, but I didn't want to, and I knew my mother would not want me to feel somehow to shake the whole time I was writing it.
You think that?
why should writing be different than any other moment of the day?
I thought Paul was very generous in letting us read this before it was set in type. And the changes that we suggested or hoped that he would make were really extremely minor. I asked for only one change about myself. Remember what it was, Paul? Only one.
No, what?
You had me reading a poet.
Oh, yes.
Go ahead. Remember...
Yes, I think I had you reading...
You said I was reading Sylvia Plath, and I
no,
said...
No, I didn't. I said you were reading Anne Sexton.
Oh, Anne Sexton. I said, please change that to Elizabeth Bishop.
See, aren't we a Tony family?
That was the only change.
I like that. You know, that real sense of literary shame of being identified with a less than top drawer poetess.
I think I should end this interview by saying that I really like shopping with my mother a lot. And in fact, for the occasion of this interview, I wore something that she got for me on one of our shopping trips together.
She has good taste, I can tell.
I hope she's listening and heard that.
And can I say one last thing?
Sure.
Which is, I think I'm very brave. You don't see John Updike going on the air with Mrs. Updike. I dare him.
It's a wise child who knows his own mother.
Well, I want to thank you again, both.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.